Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildenbrand here. Dan Rubenstein over there. SolidVerbal at gmail.com is one way you can get in touch with us. Also, look for us on the Twitters and the Facebooks. We're all over the place. We're pulling a three-show week this week, Daniel. It's the off-season, but not up in here, because we've got our second show of the week. David Ubben going to be stopping by here a little later on. We already told you all that we're going to be talking to Rich Eisen later in the week. But for now, David Ubben stopping by momentarily to talk some Big 12 football.
I don't like the glee in which you use the term up in here.
Up in here?
Up in here. All right. So before we get into to Mr. Ubben, and I think we should answer a couple of emails after the show, because we've neglected to do that. We got a couple good ones regarding the SEC and the SEC show we just did. But it's Big 12 Day.
Big 12 Day.
First and foremost,
right?
What are your, when you look at the 10 teams, it is a 10-team league as we are doing the show, hopefully it still is by the time it gets posted, thoughts on the Big 12, thoughts on teams, up and down, storylines, what are you most curious about, not just spring, but moving forward with the teams in the conference?
By the way, that would be the most fortunate show we've ever done if by the time we post this, the Big 12 is now down to like 7 teams.
Oh, I was going to say it was like up to 13.
Or up to 13, right?
Yeah.
They've added South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits. Mm-hmm. I know about the Jackrabbits because I looked about Kansas's season this year.
Sure.
When I was constructing some of my questions. No, I'm interested in Texas. We make the joke about Texas all the time. And
yeah.
I, of course, am on record from 2 years back saying, well, Texas is still Texas. And, and don't take any of what you see at face value. It's a time of transition, the post-Colt McCoy era, blah, 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 blah. Texas had a bit of a rough season last year, particularly on defense. They need to prove to me that that they still got what it takes, that Mac Brown still has what it takes to be passionate about this team, to get the defense playing the way some old Texas defenses have played in the past. That, to me, will be the most interesting storyline, because, as I think we'll talk and find out from David Ubben, the conference as a whole has a lot of losses next season.
Yes.
A lot of losses. There's potential there for the whole conference to take a collective step back. So if Texas can make any steps in the right direction, that could be big. It could put them more in the national spotlight than either you or I could predict at this juncture in late February.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to stop betting against Kansas State.
Yeah, well.
I don't know how they're going to win. They lose pretty much the defense, and then they lose Colin Klein. But listen, they're coached well. And there's a lot to be said about coaching decent players into really good players. Oklahoma, curious to see what the Belldozer looks like under center and how they deal with certain losses on offense. Texas, as far as Texas goes, if they can run the ball, I don't know who's going to stop them. I don't know that they're going to win every game. I know they're not going to win every game. But with the running back talent they have, and they've made offensive line a priority, I can't see a ton of teams with the front sevens in the conference stopping Texas. Oklahoma State, it all depends on who that quarterback is and how healthy they can stay at that position. And obviously what they did defensively in 2012, not getting the turnovers that they did in 2011 was a big deal. Texas Tech, obviously curious about Kingsbury, what that offense is going to look like minus Daigie and how quickly they can find a quarterback of the future, because Cliff Kingsbury can get a lot out of young quarterbacks. TCU, Casey Paul's back. That seems significant because he was a solidifying force for the Horned Frogs. Baylor, all Lake Seastrunk all the time.
He's winning the Heisman.
I'm actually genuinely curious with Baylor, given that they have the talent at running back and how well they ran the ball and adjusted and sort of transformed into a running team last year, how well that momentum carries through. West Virginia, defense. They just need defense. Iowa State, number of questions, but feisty. I was looking at their 2012 season. They were in pretty much every game,
right?
Like well into the third quarter, and we like to write them off. And Kansas, and just if the searching, the coach search committee is starting like in earnest now, or like next week, or like after spring practice. That's all I'm curious about.
So when Chip Kelly eventually flares out with the Eagles,
sure,
and bounces around and retires someday to a life of, I don't know, giving out financial advice a la Lenny Dykstra, You think he's going to put...
Is it just because he looks a little bit like Lenny Dykstra that you're saying that?
You think they're going to put Lake Seastrunk on the front page of the brochure when he's giving out his financial advice?
No, because his financial advice will also be from 2007. So that's a pre-Lake Seastrunk era. Screw right. that guy. No, I like Chip Kelly a lot.
Chip Kelly, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's legitimately, with all that has happened with Oregon and the Lake Seastrunk Willie Lyles situation, and it appeared that Lake Seastrunk, obviously, just was not the fit for Oregon. Whether it was a playbook thing, whether or not it was a culture and a comfort thing, whatever it was, it didn't work out with Oregon. The fact that Lake Seastrunk was able to sort of bring his name away from just being the Willie Lyles guy and yeah. into being a dominant running back at a very high college football level is genuinely awesome to see.
Sure.
And the fact that he's faster than big college football players with a completely shredded hamstring mid-play, I like that as well.
Well, so it's good. It's good to see him play because you heard a lot about him. Like you said, it's good to see him out there, to see him playing well, to make it look like maybe some of the money might have been worth it. Also interesting from the standpoint, this cannot be underscored enough. Interesting from the standpoint that Lake Seastrunk, with a first name spelled L-A-C-H-E, has not only the most misspelled first name all of next college football season, but also the most mispronounced college football name next season. People will not be able to say this guy's name. They will get it incorrect. It'll be Latch. It'll be Lachey. There is so much potential here for people to make fools of themselves. That's not even accounting for the fools that Lake Seastrunk will make of people on the football field. He will be doing it both on and off the field because of that name.
I'm going to ask you a question because we've gotten into the territory that it is the off season.
Right.
And I really love posing hypothetical queries to you. You like the use of query?
No, I like query. That's good. Good query.
All right. You have an opportunity to A, have Lake Seastrunk be a dominant running back for your team.
Dominant
I'm not saying
back.
Necessarily for Notre Dame, but Lake Seastrunk, we can agree, is a top-level college football running back now.
I'm writing this down. Okay.
Okay. Have Lake Bell in your life. Do you know who Lake Bell is?
I do.
She was in How to Make It in America.
Sure.
She is toned.
I got it.
Or C, own a lake house. Seastrunk, Bell, or House?
So I get Lake Bell.
Lake Bell is in your life in a romantic entanglement.
Are we talking about a long-term thing, or is it just like 1 week?
As long as you'd like.
I'm looking at pictures here now just to do a little bit more study.
Sure. My favorite tie is Pensive Tie.
Pensive Tie?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, okay. So the lake house has always been intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But
we're not talking about like a lake in Pennsylvania. A Lake Tahoe house.
Here's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Lake Bell is 5'8".
Ooh.
It's a little too tall
for me.
It's a little too tall for me. I'm still taller than that, but that's a little too tall for me. So right. I feel like I'd still go Lake Bell, but I wouldn't go long-term Lake Bell.
Lake Bell over a lake house?
Well, it's still Lake Bell.
Okay. All right.
I'm looking at the pictures here. I suggest you do the same.
I have a desktop, don't I, Ty? I have wallpaper.
Oh no. I'd go power rankings, Lake Bell 1A, Lake House 1B, Lake Seastrunk like 4Z.
Sure.
I don't care about Lake Seastrunk. I want to see how I hope he does well. I do. I hope for his sake he does well, but he doesn't stack up compared to the other two you gave me.
That's a fair answer. I think I would go House Bell Seastrunk.
I also should point out here that when I Google Lake Bell, along the right hand side here on my Google screen, I see an advertisement for a good old fashioned orgy, which was either
as
a movie or a TV show back in 2011. So
let me ask you this: is your safe search on or off in Google Images on the computer you're using right now?
I think it's off.
All right, good. Mine's all kinds of off.
Yeah. This is getting weird.
Yeah,
that's what we do on the show.
College football.
Yes. All right. Well, here to help us break down the Big 12. Very pleased to welcome back to the Solid Verbal from ESPN.com. His name is David Ubben. David, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a quiet off season in the Big 12, but spring officially getting started on Thursday with Texas kicking off. So about to heat up, I think.
So you mean they're not adding any teams or losing any teams or anything of that ilk?
No, I think it's going to be a while before we see that, but it'll be I think this is the first time that the Big 12 will have the same configuration that it did the previous season since like 2009, I think, so or 2010. So that's something to look forward to.
All right, so let's get into the Big 12. Scale of 1 to 10 based on what you saw this past season, with 10 being the most exciting and 1 being the least exciting. Where did this Big 12 season rank for you? Because there were a lot of fun games. There was certainly a lot of expectation ranging from Texas all the way to West Virginia, the newcomer. A lot of storylines emerging from the Big 12. How did this one rank for you?
You know, it's tough. I think ultimately you want some intrigue at the top of the standings, and it seemed like K-State just kind of ran away with it and kept beating up all comers. And you didn't have a guy like RG3 making some noise and giving some interesting storylines more in the middle of the conference. Kind of Baylor's resurgence late in the season was pretty interesting. But, you know, in terms of just pure excitement and all those things, I think that Baylor K-State game kind of deflated a lot of that. I would say probably like a 6 maybe. It wasn't awful, but I don't know that there was, a ton of drama. There was some good games and some good players, but we've seen plenty of seasons with better games and better players. So a pretty average Big 12 season, all things considered.
All right, well, then let's start at the top, at least where the top was with last season, with Kansas State, who pretty much had their way with everybody when you look across the Big 12 slate. So going into the 2013 spring and fall season, some things to be very happy about, including Bill Snyder being back in Manhattan, and the offensive line appears to be intact, but they do lose a significant number of playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. Which do you think will be more significant given what Bill Snyder tries to do? The offensive line being as intact as they are, or having to replace what they do on defense?
I think just losing so many players on defense. You know, they get Trey Walker back, who hurt his knee, missed the better part of the last half of last season, and Ty Zimmerman's back, but they lose everyone else. It's crazy. I think K-State brings back more starters than I think three teams in college football. It's crazy, and you know they lose their entire defensive line. They're losing both cornerbacks. Walker's back, but still Arthur Brown is gone. Terrell Childs is gone. Tuggle is gone. Trying to find new players to fill those roles. I mean, you can't really doubt Bill Snyder too much, but the ultimate truth is you're going to be fielding a defense next season that has very little experience. And if you're trying to do that in the Big 12, you're going to be in trouble. And I think K-State's defense could indeed be in trouble next year.
All right, and we'll go from the team that performed the best on the field to the team that seems to perform the best off the field, at least in the recruiting world. Texas hasn't had nearly the drama that they've had in years past during the offseason, but Major Applewhite, is now calling plays with Brian Harsin gone. What's the difference in mindset, in aggression, in scheme that you feel like Major Applewhite will bring to the 40 Acres?
Well, I think you're going to see him still, have a strong commitment to the run. You're seeing that in their recruiting and focusing on offensive line, but I think Harsin, much more deliberate. He loved his pre-snap shifts. He never met his pre-snap shift that he didn't love. I think you're going to see that go away, and I think you're going to see a much faster pace. I mean, Texas very much focusing on that this offseason, looking to take advantage of that. I mean, so many teams in the Big 12 are doing that these days,
right?
But they continue to do that because it's effective. You can know it's coming, but ultimately getting your defense in place and being ready to play is still difficult when you have teams like Oklahoma State and Texas Tech who are, snapping the ball sort of as you're just getting up from making a tackle. So I think you're going to see Texas do that, and additionally, try to catch some teams off guard and just move faster and get more plays off.
One of the interesting things about the Texas season last year was how they not only were not able to develop at certain positions, but they actually took steps back in regards to certain parts of the game. So where does there appear moving forward now, especially with the attention on Mack Brown, to be the most urgency to solidify and improve position-wise?
Well, I think the biggest place is linebacker. Look at Texas. This was supposed to be the defense that was better than everyone in the Big 12 by a wide margin. And Jordan Hicks hurts his hip in the middle of the season, and all of a sudden they start getting gashed by everybody.
Yep.
Texas gave up more rushing yards last season, than they have, I believe, ever. It was just insane. Everyone seemed to be able to run against them. I mean, West Virginia couldn't run the ball against anybody, Andrew Bowie, I think, had, you know, one other 100-yard game. He goes for 207 against Texas. You know, you can't do that. And so I think you've got to shore that spot up, and they've got some talent there. I know Hicks will be healthy and back next year if he can stay healthy once the season starts. But, you know, Peter Jenkins, a promising he'll be a sophomore mm-hmm. next year. And you kind of have Steve Edmund coming back, a huge body in the middle of that defense. And then, you know, Tevin Jackson played pretty well late in the season. So you kind of have I think that group ultimately, you know, Texas, they're obviously – talented in the secondary, losing Kenny Vaccaro, but Quandre Diggs is going to be back, and you've got to be able to slow the run, and that's, if you can't do that like Texas couldn't last year, the whole defense kind of falls apart, and you know they got a little bit better late in the season, but I think for me there's no question, you know, you can talk about David Ash all you want, but if the linebackers don't improve, it's going to be tough for Texas to really do a whole lot more than win 9 games next season.
All right, and Texas's big rival, of course, is Oklahoma, a team that lost 3 games last season to K-State, Notre Dame, and A&M in the bowl game. By no means, David, are those bad losses, but Bob Stoops has acknowledged that people are getting bored with your plain old 10-win seasons. People want to see more. Now we've got staff turnover, more turnover than at any previous point in the Stoops era. Is it a staff problem? Is it a personnel problem? Why does it feel like this program is just stuck in fourth gear?
I really can't. So I feel bad for Bob Stoops in a lot of ways, because it does have to be frustrating. And certainly you want to be the best you can be. But it does feel frustrating when you win 10 games last season, but you lose to your rival in the last game of the regular season. And the whole year feels like a failure. They dropped one to Baylor for the first time in school history. Now, this year they share a Big 12 title. They win 10 games again, but you get spanked in the bowl game, and everyone, you know, all of a sudden this 10-win season where you share a conference title feels like a failure. Now, certainly you're Oklahoma. You want to have those high expectations that comes with the territory. But as a coach, your margin for error is just so small. And so, you know, I think they – exactly what it is, I think you could probably point to recruiting. I think that's fair. The bottom line is you look at this Oklahoma team, and, you know, the criticism from the former players has been making headlines all offseason, and I think it's true. You know, you look at next year's season, Aaron Colvin should be a solid player, Trey Miller should be a solid player, but that's a cornerback and a fullback, and I don't know how impactful those guys are in terms of winning games. When you think back to the best Sooner teams, you know, most recently that 2018 that went to the national championship game, I'm not so sure that you know, maybe you removed Colvin from the equation, you could probably find maybe 5, maybe 10 more guys that were better than any single player on this year's team. You talk about Trent Williams, Gerald McCoy, Sam Bradford, even the Ryan Broyles and Joaquin Iglesias and all of those guys. You know, it just seems like the talent level has slowly kind of dropped, and it's not like Oklahoma's a bad team. They're obviously winning a lot of games, but it's clear they've kind of fallen from their status as a perennial national title contender. They can't just reload. You know, they're winning a lot of games, but they're also losing a lot more than they're used to.
Just as an aside, how much fun did you guys have over at the blog with the Bob Stoops AT&T commercial?
I think there was a hello or two shared. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, let's move across state then to Oklahoma State, a team that lost Brandon Whedon, lost Justin Blackman, still managed to score 30 points in every game but one this past season. Clearly, offense is not a problem. On the other hand, defensively, the Cowboys just weren't consistent enough to keep themselves in some of those shootouts that they found themselves getting into. Glenn Spencer now steps in to replace Bill Young as the new defensive coordinator. How does he make Oklahoma State's defense better, or I guess which area should he focus on if he wants to try and make that defense a little better equipped to handle the competition in the Big 12?
Well, the way you succeed on defense in the Big 12, I mean, you're not going to stop these offenses. You can't be built like that. But you got to be opportunistic. You got to tackle the ball. You have to be solid in space, but you also have to go after the ball and try to force turnovers. But then, and Gary Patterson talked a ton about this last offseason, you got to be great in the red zone. You've got to hold teams of three. If you do that, you're going to win a lot of games. And so that's, I think, got to be a big focus there. You know, when Bill Young was the coordinator there, they ranked in the top 15 in takeaways 3 consecutive seasons. And that year they won the Big 12, they forced 44 turnovers. that's an insane number. Six more than LSU, who forced the second most in 2012. Last year, that number dropped significantly. And, you know, I don't think anybody's asking to force 40 turnovers a season, but you've got to force more. And, you know, they went, you know, something like five games without a turnover. You got to bounce back and try to get a few more of those. And that's really what you have to do in this league. And the way you do that is, you know, gang tackling the ball, getting after the ball, pressuring the quarterback, pressuring guys into mistakes. And that's not always easy, but if you can have some pass rushers, you can do some things. And so, you know, for Oklahoma State, you know, it's a lot of those things, just forcing turnovers and doing well in the red zone. And you're going to give up a lot of yards, and everyone in the Big 12 does. But if you can do those two things, you're going to be successful.
All right. Well, you did mention Gary Patterson, so let's go to TCU. A TCU team who looks like they could have a very special defense, and a TCU team that brings back quarterback Casey Paul-Hall after he was suspended for the final 8 or 9 games of 2012. So I guess the first question is, how good can this defense be, and how does it compare depth-wise to the pre-2011 Gary Patterson defenses?
Well, you know, I think it has a chance to be really great. Nobody really stops offenses in this league, but TCU came pretty close in a few games last year, and mm-hmm. You're going to give up yards sometimes, but their offense really didn't do a whole lot after Paul-Hall left, with the exception of a couple games, and that defense still kept them in games. You know, you look at the way they slowed down K-State, the way they slowed down Oklahoma. You know, a lot of offenses work for everything that they got, and so that's definitely an encouragement, but as far as how this defense ranks depth-wise, you know, I don't know that it's ever been tested like this, so it's tough to really compare. You know, there's obviously impact players all over the place. You know, cornerback Jason Barrett, I think, was the best cover guy in the league this year. Devontae Fields, definitely one of the best pass rushers. I think you can make a case for him as the best defender in the league. With apologies, probably Meshack Williams and Alex Okafor and Arthur Brown this past season. But he was definitely up there with them. And then, you know, Kenny Kane is gone now, but I think you really got a lot of playmakers. Sam Carter and Alicia Olabode back at safety. You know, this could be a special defense, but at the same time, you know, we kind of thought that about Texas this time last year too. And so, you know, impact players don't necessarily mean a whole lot if you kind of have some holes, you have some injuries. But as far as how that depth compares, I think there's no question that Big 12 offenses are going to answer that question over the next few months.
And one of the reasons why we speak so highly of Big 12 offenses is because they get to play against Texas Tech every year. And Texas Tech is now moving, of course, to a new regime. Cliff Kingsbury takes over. They got themselves an SEC coach, which is just like the trolling-est thing to say. So it sort of makes sense, given that hire, what their offense will look like, what the sensibility will look like, given his experience at A&M and Houston with Kevin Sumlin. Where is the defense strong? You wrote about the issues at safety and in the secondary, but where is the defense strong, and what do you expect that defense to look like philosophically, I guess, given the hires and given the talent that returns to Lubbock?
Well, I really love what they've done up front. I mean, you look at what they their biggest problem, you know, was stopping a run and really getting any pressure on passers, and that was consistent throughout Tuberville's time at Texas Tech. But last season, you know, with Kerry Hyder and Dartuan Bush up front, I love what those guys did, and obviously they had some great players at safety, Cody Davis and DJ Johnson, but those guys are gone. Bush and Hyder, I think, really, you know, in this league, if you can rush the passer, it masks a lot of your other deficiencies, and it's kind of like having a quarterback on offense. If you've got a guy who can deliver the ball and do so accurately, quickly, make good decisions, it makes everything look a lot better. And the defensive line force some teams into mistakes and put people a little bit under the gun. And for me, I think that's no question the biggest strength of Texas Tech's defense. And I think if they make some noise next season, that's where it's going to be at.
All right. And I will finish out my section of this with Iowa State, a team that is easy to look at the Big 12 and think, oh, the schools in Texas and Oklahoma, and then you have, I guess, Iowa State is up there and Iowa doing their own thing. But Iowa State was a team that was in pretty much every game they played in. They probably played Kansas State tougher than pretty much everybody in the conference. And it appears that they've found themselves a quarterback of the future in Sam Richardson, with a very strong end of the season. My question to you about Iowa State is, when we've seen the Cyclones succeed in years past, it's because of strong, deep play on the lines. How well-equipped are they on both of their lines this year to, again, be in a lot of conference games and or win conference games like they did in 2012?
Well, I think replacing, I mean, Jake Knott and A.J. Klein, ultimately a linebacker, I think were the guys that made that defense go. I mean, you know, Jake McDonough had a nice season last year for them on the defensive line, but really, I think it did boil down to the linebackers. And they've had some solid offensive lines come through there, but, you know, the offenses just have not been much to write home about throughout Paul Rhodes' time there. And I think if Iowa State is ever going to make the leap and get to doing more than maybe springing one upset a year and squeaking into bowl games with six wins, it does start with the quarterback. And so, you know, Sam Richardson, the Florida native, you know, he definitely showed some potential, but he showed it against Kansas. And the last couple games of the season, he completed less than 50% of his passes. Looked really, really rough. And lost to Tulsa to close the season. And so, you know, going in the spring, I don't know that you can count out Grant Rojas, a younger guy. You know, I think they feel like Sam Richardson's their guy, but you've got to know that for sure. And he can't allow younger guys to sort of push him. You know, he's got to really establish himself. And this spring is when it has to happen. So, you know, talk about the lines, and they've been okay. You know, Kelechi Osemele just got himself a Super Bowl ring at the Ravens last season in his rookie season. But, you know, the linebackers have been a real constant for them over 3 years. And then that, and replacing those guys is going to be difficult. But until Iowa State could get a consistent quarterback in there, he's not, you know, getting benched every two games and not, you know, turning the ball over 10 times in 3 or 4 games, it's going to be really tough for Iowa State. But if Richardson is that guy and can kind of grow up this spring and be a new man in the fall and look like he did against Kansas and not so much how he did, you know, in the last couple games of the season, I think Iowa State could definitely make that leap. But, you know, we'll see, and we'll find out a lot about them this spring.
All right, quickly, a few more teams. Let's go to Kansas, a team that won its first game against the mighty Jackrabbits of South Dakota State and proceeded to lose its next 11. Not a great start for Charlie Weiss, but he is on record that there is an overhaul afoot on defense, especially with some junior college transfers coming in, and Jake Heaps is a name that people know at quarterback. I guess what I'm asking is whether or not this is all Dane Chris' fault.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's tough to look too much because, sure, Dane had a rough season last year, but he's not getting any help. You know, they ran the ball pretty well, but his receivers, you know, they didn't have a receiver catch a touchdown pass last season. That's unthinkable.
Troubling.
You know, they had a tight end catch one or two, and the running backs had caught a couple more, but they didn't have a wide receiver catch a touchdown pass last year.
Wow.
If you told me that, and you showed me, oh, this team played in the Big 12, well, did they even win a game in that conference last season? No, they did not. And so that's you know, there's got to be more help there. You know, when your best receiver is, you know, Kale Pick, a converted quarterback, and it's just a mess. And so it's hard to really blame Chris. The bottom line is, you know, they've had, even under Gill, they've had strong talent at running back. But if you don't have playmakers in the passing game that can catch the ball, go upfield, make some plays, and get open and be consistent, you're not going to win very much. And that's what Kansas has got. So, you know, getting an upgrade at quarterback and he's playing well, I mean, he can do everything he wants, but until he gets some help at receiver, you know, it's going to be a little while. And so it's kind of about, you know, developing guys. And, you know, Andrew Truzilli showed some potential in bringing in Rodriguez Coleman, one of the best JUCO receivers in the country. They're trying to get some immediate help there, but, you know, those guys have just got to step up and be better than they were. It's just that simple. Without a talent upgrade there, it's going to be another long season for KU.
The Baylor Bears, interesting story with Nick Florence, an outgoing senior, second nationally behind Johnny Football in yards per game, opts to stay at Baylor and get his master's degree instead of going to the NFL. So that's one side of the Baylor storyline this offseason. The other is that Lake Seastrunk has already said he's winning the 2013 Heisman. Will he?
I vote for him, actually.
Right. Will he be in the discussion when it comes time to vote for that Heisman? He did close out the season very strongly. Is Lake Seastrunk a serious contender for this award or not?
In the Big 12 scheme of things, sure. And the Big 12 kind of has a dearth of real candidates. You look at Oklahoma's Blake Bell, maybe is one of them. But Seastrunk's right up there. You know, David Ash, maybe if he becomes sort of a new man this year. But there's just not a lot of candidates. I think Seastrunk, you know, a few years ago would have been unthinkable for a Heisman winner to be out of Baylor. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. But, you know, if Baylor, you know, they're going to be in position to be surprised some people. The Big 12, pretty weak at the top of the league. So if you can play well and if that defense matures and they can start kind of winning some games, get in the 8, 9, 10 win range, if Seastrunk's running through, you know, 1,700 some yards, that's possible. And, you know, over the last, five games of the season, he ran for 980 yards and five touchdowns. So
wow.
If he does that again next year, if he kind of keeps at this pace, there's no reason why he can't be in it, but that's a big if. He set the bar so high for himself that it's going to be tough to reach it. But there's no question, if the production is there and Baylor starts winning games, I mean, there's no reason why he can't be in the picture.
All right, let's close it out then with West Virginia. 10th in the nation in total offense last year, but 108th in total defense. A terribly one-sided attack, and now it loses Geno Smith, Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey. David, assuming the defense just gets marginally better, because it can't get much worse, are we still looking at a season in which the Mountaineers, by virtue of all their losses, take a giant step backwards?
I don't know. I think they can still, for all the expectations, they were still a team that went a mighty 7-6 last season. So I could see them actually equaling that. You know, I think Ford Childress and Paul Miller are going to have an interesting battle at quarterback. I think those two are both going to be solid, whoever wins that job. The biggest thing for them is they need to find some guys for them to throw it to. You know, they lost five of their top six receivers from last year. Austin and Bailey are gone, but then and J.D. Woods graduated, but then they had two of their other receivers, Shamaris Copeland and Ivan McCartney, transfer. So now it's down to just Jordan Thompson, who played as a true freshman last year out of Houston. He can kind of do some things. He didn't do a ton last year because so many looks went to Bailey and Austin. But he's going to get some of that, bringing in one of the best receivers in the country, Shelton Gibson from Open Ohio. They just got to find some weapons in that offense in the passing game. And if they can do that, I think they could win a few games and get to that 7-win mark again, but certainly not anything close to a serious contender for a Big 12 title. And, they made a lot of changes defensively, fired their quarterbacks coach, Darren Roberts, took away the play calling duties from Jordan Forrest, the long-time Oklahoma State assistant, gave it to Keith Patterson, the other co-defensive coordinator. So we'll see if that changes anything, but I think the defense will be a little bit better, and offensively, obviously ready to take a step back, but they've got to be better running the ball. Sean Austin should be healthy, and they really just have to find somebody to throw the ball to. Thompson's not going to be able to get it done by himself.
David, one of the things that we noticed and people that we spoke to told us that their opinion was that the Big 12 had the most pretty good to very good teams in 2012, which I think is an acceptable point considering how many talented seniors, especially there were in the conference in an offensive-heavy league, and now that the conference loses Colin Klein, Landry Jones, Seth Dagey, Geno Smith. How do you think this conference as a whole is in 2013? Is it a major step back because of those senior losses, or do you think that there is enough youth to make this a nationally viable conference at the top?
No, I think you're going to see a pretty mediocre year in the Big 12 next season. I think ultimately there's just not that true national championship contender. And, you know, I could see the Big 12 sort of getting knocked out of the national championship race by mid-October. I really think that's a possibility. Just because there's not an elite team, and certainly, you know, maybe Oklahoma can surprise some people. Maybe Texas can finally turn the corner. You know, maybe TCU can hold us together. Maybe Oklahoma State can surpass some expectations. There's some teams with potential, but along with that potential, you know, there's an equal amount of weaknesses in all of those teams. And so, you know, there's not a real juggernaut. And, you know, the Big 12, everyone's headed in the right direction. You know, Kansas still trying to build. But, you know, even Iowa State has proved that they can beat anybody over the past few years. And, you know, West Virginia's got to prove some things. But everyone's going to be okay, but at the top of the league, I think you're going to see a lot of weakness and open the season without a top 10 team. And that's the first time that the Big 12 has ever done that in the history of the league. And so that's definitely a concern. And I think you're going to see it on the field. So I think you're headed for kind of a similar deal. A lot of good teams, but not any real elite teams.
All right. And you have the opportunity, and this is just a hypothetical, obviously. If you have the opportunity to spend a night in Vegas with Dana Holgorsen, Cliff Kingsbury, or the persona that is fake Dan Beebe, who is it and why?
Oh, gosh. What are the options again? Kingsbury, Holgorsen,
fake Dan Beebe.
I would go with fake Dan Beebe and then keep my distance and write about it. How's that sound?
That's fair. All right. His name, all the hot sports takes, by the way.
Hot sports
David
takes.
David on fire.
Yeah.
Hot sports takes, hot Big 12 takes, excuse me. David Ubben, of course, you can find his work on ESPN.com and the Big 12 blog. Does an outstanding job. Nobody is finer at keeping track of all things Big 12, not just during football season, Ty, all damn year long throughout the summer. So, of course, pay attention to that. David, thank you very much for coming on the show. We will have to speak to you again soon. It is mandatory.
No problem. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Again, that is David Ubben, ESPN.com, stopping by, talking all things Big 12 with us here. What were the three names that you threw out there? Holgorsen?
Kingsbury.
One. Kingsbury.
Fake Dan Beebe. And here are the advantages to each, obviously, because we're on a hypothetical offseason kick.
Right.
Holgorsen, you're getting down and dirty with the sort of gambling, drinking, I wouldn't say seedier, but you're talking about it's going to be a rough night. It's
right.
Great stories.
In Vegas, no less.
In Vegas. It's not going to be boring.
Right.
Essentially, that's the key. Kingsbury, younger guy. Are you older or younger than Cliff Kingsbury? I think he's like...
I'm going to have to look this up. This is a show of Google searches, which is very fascinating.
You can keep the safe search off for Cliff Kingsbury.
Okay, continue.
Although they're all spanking. He was born in 79, August 9, 79.
Okay,
he's 33.
He's older than I am, yeah.
He's older than you are. Okay.
Right.
So with Kingsbury, you're getting somebody upper echelon, just sort of, he's a bro.
Yeah.
He's going to do pretty well in Vegas. He's got a great job. He's a good-looking dude, in shape, former college quarterback, has power at a big college program. You're talking about somebody with a portfolio.
Another question here, an aside. How many Cliffs do you have in your life right now? How many Cliffs do you actually know on a personal level?
Personally?
Yeah.
I don't know if I know anybody, especially not with a K. But
I know two Cliffs with a C.
Really?
And then going back to my elementary school days, there's Clifford the Big Red Dog, which everyone knows, but...
But you're talking about personally, like you have their cell phone number or you've seen them in the past 5 years and like had a beer or a conversation.
One's a probation officer, and another is a very talented computer person. So,
are they Cliffs with C's?
They are Cliffs with C. I feel like if you go to the K though, maybe that's when you inherit the good looks.
It might be the two most important Cliffs in my life are Harris.
Okay.
And I don't know his last name from Cheers. But yeah, that's impressive. So, and then the final option in the Vegas question is fake Dan Beebe, which is the wild card.
Sure.
You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if TV deals will be negotiated in penthouse suites. You don't know if lines will be snorted at Del Taco.
Sure.
Everything and anything is on the board. So it's whether or not you want to take a chance, insane roughness, or possible fun with the ladies.
Here's the question.
Yeah.
Am I single?
You are single as the year is long.
I am single and ready to mingle. In that case, look, I'm not going fake Dan Beebe. I like fake Dan Beebe. I think he's funny. But if you're at a Vegas bar, you can't pull out the tweet deck. Well, maybe you can, but
sure, but that's
down.
A waste. There's other things.
You can't pull out your Twitter interface of choice. Mm-hmm. And expect to impress anybody. No one there is going to be impressed. No one at the blackjack table, at the bar. That's not how Vegas do.
Right.
Holgorsen's going to get you in all sorts of trouble, as you alluded. You're going to end up at the CD strip club at like 3:30 in the morning, and you're going to enjoy every minute of it until the next day when you can't remember any of it.
Well, I was going to say, but the stories are going to be, they will last you longer than the stories probably of Beebe or Kingsbury.
If I am single, though, I'm thinking of this from the male perspective. I'm single. Mm-hmm. If you're out with Holgersson, you're going to have a good time. Holgersson looks a little creepy, though. If you're single and if you're ready to mingle, the skullet might pull in a caliber of woman that you are not interested in speaking with.
Or just don't have the facilities to deal with.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So Kingsbury, at least, I think you could attract some top shelf talent, if you will. Right? You could bring in a better class of female if you've got Cliff Kingsbury. He looks like Ryan Gosling, former quarterback, current coach. This guy's got the whole package here. The only concern then would be that, he would get the better looking friend. Of course, because he's Cliff Kingsbury.
That's okay.
His name starts with a K, for crying out loud. He gets the better looking friend. You then have to seemingly hitch all your options on the girl Cliff's talking to having an attractive friend, which in Vegas is probably a good percentage. So I probably go Cliff.
I'm going to say Cliff Kingsbury at a Vegas bachelorette party is like Andy Staples at a barbecue.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Just doing work.
Doing work, for sure.
So I'm going to say Kingsbury.
Kingsbury, okay.
I'm going to say Kingsbury, or I'm going to say Lake Bell.
Well, this has been a productive discussion, Dan.
We get to the bottom of things on the Solid Verbal.
This has been a productive discussion, to say the absolute very least. Did we want to do emails today?
Let's get a couple emails. I feel like we neglect Verballers way too much, and they are far too kind and loyal and awesome to do so.
Well, let's play the sound.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
All right. We say each and every week we like to pay homage to those of you who write into solidverbal@gmail.com. It's not every week. We are delinquent in our duties, but we try our best. Solidverbal@gmail.com is the email address. Dan, do you have any messages in front of you that you'd like to read?
I have two in front of me that I starred that were happening in or around the SEC show that have to do with SEC content.
Okay.
First question. With the recruiting class A&M brought in, so this is sort of Big 12 relevant, do y'all, and I like that I say y'all, think that they have a chance to win the SEC and possibly play for a national championship? This is a follow-up to our SEC show. Ty, do they have a chance to win the SEC? If they win the SEC, they're playing for the national championship.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they have a chance. Everybody's got a chance. I am concerned, though.
Is there reason to be optimistic about that being an end game?
There is plenty of reason. You've got Johnny Manziel. You brought in an incredible recruiting class, especially guys at the skill positions. They saw what Kevin Sumlin could do. They wanted to come to Texas A&M. Makes a lot of sense to me that they'd be able to put forth another offensive effort the way that they did last season. They do have some losses, though. Some bigger name guys, certainly along the offensive line, aren't going to be there. They have to prove to me that they can stop some other teams in the SEC. They did a better job of that as the season went on, but they have to maintain throughout. I think it's possible, but I would caution people about getting too gung-ho on A&M. They had a great year. They finished strongly. There's a lot to be excited about headed into this season. But let's pump the brakes and then playing for a national championship. The potential's there, but you got to start with the SEC West before you move on to the SEC and then on to any BCS bowl game. It's a tough road in.
Keep in mind that last season was as nice a time to enter the SEC West as we can imagine will ever be the case, so long as the SEC West invests in football as much as they do. Auburn down, Arkansas down, Mississippi okay, Mississippi State okay. LSU had their struggles, but of course LSU goes into College Station and wins. Alabama, of course, dominant. It was an ideal time to enter into a dominant division. This year, it's actually still not a bad time to be playing, especially with what LSU loses on defense. Mississippi State loses offensive skill. Mississippi is going to be relying on a ton of youth. Arkansas and Auburn are shifting to new coaching staffs and new players at important places. So yes, they have Alabama, but they have Alabama and College Station. I think it's a reason to be very optimistic. I still, personnel wise, losing DeMontre Moore, Luke Jokel, those guys are enormous as for the success, and losing obviously Kingsbury. And I want to say Apollyon took over in Nevada, who was on the coaching staff for Texas A&M. So many Apollyons out there. I feel like if you had to assign a percentage to Texas A&M in the SEC, at least championship game, what would that be in your mind?
A&M SEC championship game, I'd say probably pretty low, because that means they got to get past Alabama, and they could do it, but
they're on a winning streak against Alabama.
They are on a winning streak. It's extended to one game.
Yes.
SEC West, I would put the odds at
30%. They're the second team,
30%,
right?
30%.
You'd put them ahead of LSU. As for
I probably would put them ahead of LSU. Yeah. I'd probably go Alabama 65. Let's go Texas A&M. No, Alabama 60, A&M 30. LSU, what is this, 10? I don't know. It's probably the wrong way.
60, 30, 10.
Probably the wrong way to proportion my percentage points.
I was going to go right around this. I was going to go 65, 25, 10.
Yeah, I like A&M over LSU at this point.
All right. And then we had another question that was somewhat related. A lot of Texas A&M SEC fandom. Two questions. What are the chances we see an all-SEC national championship this year, like in 2011, Game of the Century Round 2?
Very good.
Long time, September 14th. There's a long time between September 14th and early January. Could we see a final FU national championship game to everyone north of the Mason-Dixon line and west of College Station, our last year of the BCS before the Final Four in 2014? I'm going to say zero.
Yeah.
Zero chances. And I have the numbers, Ty.
Okay, go ahead.
I did some research to back this up.
Yes, please.
That game did a really, really low number ratings-wise, the LSU-Alabama game.
Right.
It's people are just not – I think it did like a 14 share, which was only better than a couple of them. When the quotient TV-wise – and mind you, everything is driven by TV. That's where the money is coming from. It is generally SEC against blank, or it's two huge historic programs, which shouldn't be a surprise, that do the best numbers. So the best team that was not in the SEC in the national championship game, Ohio State and Florida, was a 17-4. Alabama-Texas, 17-2. Tennessee-Florida State, 17-2. Oklahoma-Florida, 15-4. Auburn-Oregon, 15-3. And then your most relevant program in the nation, Notre Dame,
sure,
did a 15-1 behind Oregon against an SEC team. And then Oklahoma-LSU, 14-5. Ohio State-LSU, 14-4. And then Bama LSU. So I think the appeal of having that all SEC is a huge appeal to teams and fan bases in the SEC, but not much beyond that. So if it can be avoided, if it's not a situation where two teams are undefeated and everybody else has two or more losses, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when you mention this,
or like a zero loss team and a one loss team, right? Obviously, two teams in the SEC can't go undefeated.
Sure. When you mentioned this initially,
yeah,
I said, yeah, sure. It's possible. I think it's possible. I think a situation like we saw 2 years ago with Alabama LSU is always right. Possible. And what we see now around college football, I think if you look out at the landscape, maybe Ohio State has the best chance of any of the non-SEC teams of going undefeated, right? If Ohio,
yeah, how would you handicap that right now?
I think Ohio State. Probably, if are we handicapping in terms of odds of going undefeated?
Odds of playing an SEC team in the national championship if the SEC continues its high level of play.
Sure. I think Ohio State's probably the clubhouse favorite to get there, just because they play in the Big Ten. They seem to be they seem to be peaking at the right time towards the end of the season. Oregon's also an interesting one for me, but I don't know what's going to happen without Chip Kelly. That to me is a great unknown. And then beyond that, I don't default all the way to Stanford or Clemson, someone like that, to get into the championship game.
I may have Stanford ahead of Oregon at this point, just because of I guess they lose Pep Hamilton to the NFL, but
yeah,
the continuity there, bringing back the quarterback, having the size to get through what is appearing to be a more and more difficult Pac-12 schedule. I do like a lot about Oregon back in this position, just because of the experience that they do bring back, even though they lose a few key pieces on defense. But yeah, the thing that terrifies me about Ohio State is the thing that terrified me last season about USC, and that's just how much they have to replace on the defensive line.
Sure.
Even though the Big Ten is not something that instills a ton of fear into a ton of people at this point, having to replace that, even though I really do love a lot of things about Ohio State, is scary to rely on that much youth at such a key position group. So I would say Stanford, Oregon, then Ohio State would be my order of teams to end up in the national championship game as of mid to late February.
Mid to late February. No, I guess to my point, though, it's certainly possible that we could find ourselves.
Those seem like the teams with the least questions.
Those are the teams with the least questions. But if you're talking all SEC national championship, keep in mind that because these teams are in the SEC,
right,
because these teams are going to start out the season ranked higher than a lot of other teams, they're right, going to have more staying power at the top. And if you're in Ohio State, if you're in Oregon, if you're a Stanford, a Clemson, a Louisville, we'll throw them
Notre
in the discussion.
Dame.
Notre Dame. Those teams lose once, they sink like a stone. I think right, it's easier for an SEC team to work its way back up to the top just by virtue of the conference strength as a whole. The potential for that to happen again, though I wish it were lower, does exist and could still happen. But you're right, I don't think the public wants it. The public.
How do you feel about how about Notre Dame?
They lose Tao and the fake girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of talent on the defense. I think people hear the name Tao, they think, oh, he's gone. The defense is going to suffer, and it will. But they were fairly young on defense, especially in the secondary.
Stephon Tuitt at Knicks?
They were fairly young. And so yeah, I think they're going to be fine still along the front seven. Their secondary is going to be much improved because a lot of youngsters got good playing time.
Yeah.
Offensively speaking, they have some losses along the line.
Yep.
They've got question marks at the running back position. I think they're going to be able to use Greg Bryant, one of the names that we discussed on National Signing Day. They're going to be able to use some of these incoming freshmen to help bolster their running game that they got going with Brian Kelly last year. I feel pretty good about Notre Dame. I feel like 12-0 might have been a lucky stroke of lightning this past season because there were several instances in which Notre Dame got away with one.
Right.
But this is still a 9, a 10-win team. If they do any worse than that, I would be utterly shocked because many of the key contributors from last season are still in place. And
coaches.
And coaches, sure. They retain Chuck Martin. They retain Bob Diaco. Obviously, Brian Kelly is retained as well.
Yeah.
I think they're in good position. They did really well on the recruiting trail. And they are now setting themselves up for continued sustainable success, which is something we have not been able to say about Notre Dame football for the better part of the last decade.
The other team that I think could be a wild card, and what's today's date? February 20th?
Yeah.
I'm gonna curse them right now. Might as well do it early. Your Clemson Tigers.
Clemson Tigers, huh?
Well, they open against Georgia, I want to say, but I think it's at home.
Right.
So we'll know where they are pretty quickly. But, you know, the offensive skill is there. Look, they lost to Florida State and South Carolina, two teams, as we look back at the schedule, that were just better than Clemson.
Right.
Those two teams lost some significant contributors. And, the offense is going to be good. They beat LSU in their bowl game. A good LSU defense. A really good LSU defense. They could squeak out a couple of wins against better teams or teams on the same level. ACC is going to be terrible. I don't know. I'm cursing you now, but lot to like.
Well, I don't know.
They almost convinced Robert Condice to go there.
that's a nice little almost for him.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think they're solidly a top 8 or 10 team right now.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like
just
Clemson.
Just because I'm not super crazy about other teams. Yeah,
they're going to be fine. All right, well, what else we got? We got anything else? We talked to David Ubbin, went to Big 12. We did emails here. Thank you to everyone who wrote in. Again, solidverbal@gmail.com. Did your two hypotheticals now between Lake Bell, Blake Bell. No, it wasn't Blake Bell. It was Lake Seastrunk, Lake Bell.
I like
Lake
that
House.
Lake Bell and Blake Bell are pretty close.
Yeah, it's a little too close. And then the hypothetical, of course, the Vegas tandem with Holgorsen, Kingsbury, and fake Dan Beebe. I still go Kingsbury.
Can I say something before we finish out this show?
All right, go ahead.
Still real cold.
Yeah, you know, you like complaining about this weather.
Still real cold. I'm turning jaundice.
So now, what do you do? You're a California boy. You're not used to this.
Yeah.
Do you go winter hat? Do you go gloves? What do you? Today was the first day. I'll get this on the. Today was the first day.
You wore a skirt.
That too. First day I actually wore my winter knit hat because it was so damn cold.
Really? Yeah. I didn't wear a beanie today, but I wore a scarf. which is pretty significant because this is the first time in my life I've consistently worn a scarf.
Right.
I'm probably going to go gloves and a scarf on the way out. I'm going out to dinner, so I don't get to get too warm too quickly. Some Chinese food.
Okay. Here's the bright spot for you.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, it's the beginning of the end of winter.
I don't believe you.
After this weekend, going to go up into the mid-40s.
All right.
And then it's going to be a slow build. We're going to have our ups and downs. You're going to have one day in early March where it's 65. You're going to have another where it goes down to like 41. But after next week, it's going to start going up. Mark my word. Solid verbal. My shoulder is recuperating. I'll actually be up in your neck of the woods on Monday.
That's true.
To get this thing looked at a little bit more. So,
are you going to get one of those robot surgeons?
I was thinking about it. The guy I'm going to see actually developed a robotic surgery.
Really?
So I hope they don't do that to me, but it does sound intriguing. I'll probably ask him about it.
Do you think a robot surgeon could, like, attract a female human?
Attract a female human?
Our friend and producer Will is in the other room, and he heard that. No, well, like, if you're a female human.
Bring Will on here. We need to talk to Will about this.
Will, do you want to sit in?
Bring Will in here.
Will's coming in. This is an important question.
Will's the one with the hair, too, which we can
Will's
also
the one
discuss.
With the hair. He looks like Triple H.
Right. So okay. Ask Will this question.
Will has an answer.
I have a question that'll decide my answer a little bit. I just want to know how robotically endowed is
this
robot surgeon?
We're talking above average.
What's above average for a robot?
I guess it depends on the RAM. If I'm gonna,
that's
what. Yeah. So I'm saying right now, I'm gonna pose this question to both of you.
Yeah.
Right now, you're an eligible female in New York.
Yeah.
You have gentlemen and other females that do all sorts of things professionally.
Can we bring Cliff Kingsbury back into this one?
We're not bringing Cliff Kingsbury into this.
No, okay.
But what I'm saying is you're a female in this particular case. You could date a guy, an assistant manager at a Panera, or you could date a robot surgeon with its own practice.
Wow.
If you're a gold digger, I say you have to go for the robot.
Go for the robot.
Because robots, while they have the capacity for surgery, few have the capacity for love that I'm aware of.
Right. So low maintenance, almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, you're not getting the emotional fulfillment.
But at that point, if you're going after a robot, I'm not sure you're looking for emotional fulfillment.
I think that's a fair response. I think I'm going for the robot if I'm a lady.
The Panera thing, though, could probably affect your day-to-day life a little bit more.
If we put a robot surgeon up on Match.com, does that robot surgeon get responses? I say yes.
Yes. Yes.
I would think so, yeah. Because people would at least ask, what do you mean? Like,
what's the deal here? I'm confused.
You're talking like Wall-E with a scalpel? Like, what is...
No, I'm not talking about Wally with the scalpel. I'm talking full robot size surgeon.
Wow.
You get to tell mom and dad that you met a doctor?
Sure.
Well, I think some women would also be interested in kind of like when a guy or a girl is interested in someone of the opposite sex
right.
who is interested in their own sex and trying to turn them.
Ooh.
I feel like certain women might be like, I bet I could turn this robot and he could know what love is.
I don't know how you follow that up. That's a fantastic point. It's a challenge.
So basically like teaching a Furby to have affection is what he's saying.
Teaching a Furby to have affection. I guess so.
Wow. And to use a scalpel. Well, I don't know how we follow that up, Dan.
Oh, we don't.
The show notes on this segment should be worth their weight in gold.
I would assume so. I mean, to have somebody transcribe this.
Somebody's going to be listening to this saying, what just happened here?
Let's pose this question to the verballers. Single lady verballers, even taken lady verballers. I don't mean to go against anybody that is a male looking for a robot.
We are breaking down all social mores here on the Solid Verb.
But I'm going to say single or taken ladies.
Yeah.
All ladies. Would you at least get coffee with a robot surgeon?
Getting
That's all I'm asking.
With a robot surgeon. It would be
just
interesting.
Just grab a cup of coffee.
All right. Well, let us know.
Solidverbal@gmail.com.
Solidverbal@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know.
Yeah.
Also, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/solidverbal, as well as
Great.
Twitter @solidverbal. You heard Dan's question. Answer it. You heard the other question about Cliff Kingsbury, our boy.
Mm-hmm.
Answer that one. Answer the Lake Bell. Answer all the questions or pose new ones based on what you heard here tonight on yep. Solid Verbal. Again, our website is solidverbal.com. Do stop by. Listen to some other shows while you're there. In the meantime, for that guy over there in beautiful New York City, asking all the hard questions and doing his best to stay warm. For myself, Ty, here in the good old Lehigh Valley, thanks again for listening. Catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.